House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. Let the record reflect that it is 5 p.m. on Tuesday, February 1st, 2011. Present are Representative Osterman, Representative Miller, Representative Heron, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Chairman Representative Thompson. I'd also like to introduce our committee staff, House Secretary Kelly Burnett, and Fisheries Committee Aide Jomo Stewart. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear an overview from the Department of Fish and Game, Division of Commercial Fisheries. The presentation is for information purposes, so committee members should feel free to ask questions as they arise. With us this evening, we have Sue Asplund, Acting Director of the Division. Thank you for coming. We also have a number of other commercial fisheries personnel online. Jeff Regnart, Supervisor of the Central Region in Anchorage, is with us, as are Nick Segalkin and Jeff Waddle of Western Region in Kodiak, and Matt Newmuth, Salmon Research Biologist for the Western Region. Thank you all for making yourselves available to the committee this evening. Ms. Asplund, if you would come, go ahead and state your name for the record and continue with your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Sue Asplund. I'm the Acting Director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The division mission of commercial fisheries is grounded in Article 8 of the Alaska State Constitution, as well as Title 16 of Alaska Statute, subject to allocations of the Alaska Board of Fisheries. And for those not able to see the projector, our mission is to manage subsistence, commercial, and personal use fisheries in the interest of the general well-being of the people and economy of the state, consistent with the state sustained yield principle, and subject to allocations through public regulatory process. The Division of Commercial Fisheries manages all commercial fisheries in state waters, with the exception of halibut, which is managed under an international treaty with Canada. Some salmon in southeast Alaska and on the Yukon are also subject to international treaty. We also manage some species in federal fisheries. Those are the fisheries from 3 to 200 miles under delegation from the federal government, such as scallops, crab, and some groundfish. In addition, we manage subsistence fisheries in Arctic Yukon, Kuskokwim, and South Central Alaska, and subsistence and personal use fisheries in marine waters in Southeast Alaska and in the westward region of the state. Some of the commercially important species of seafood in Alaska include 5 species of salmon, 7 species of crab, 4 species of shrimp, walleye pollock, Pacific halibut, Pacific cod, sablefish, herring, flatfish, and rockfish, loon cod, geoducks, sea cucumbers, sea urchins, and in addition, aquatic farms in Alaska also produce oysters, little neck clams, and geoducks. The core services of the department are 4. Harvest management, which is control of the harvest of fisheries resources for subsistence, commercial, and personal uses according to plans and regulations and subject to allocations of the Board of Fisheries. Stock assessment and applied research, which is maintenance of ongoing programs for the enumeration, assessment, and understanding of salmon, herring, groundfish, and shellfish stocks. Aquaculture permitting, which is the to permit and provide regulatory, technical, and planning services to aquatic farmers and private nonprofit hatcheries in the state. And information services and publication. Under this core service, we develop and maintain the dissemination of data, analysis, and publish reports documenting that information. A little bit more on harvest management. You can see from the slide that that consists of supporting the Board of Fisheries in establishing regulations and management plans, opening and closing fishing areas and setting fishing times, collecting harvest and biological data, and again writing annual management reports to synthesize that information. We do that consistent with the policy for management of sustainable fisheries and the policy for statewide escapement goals in regulation for salmon. And the division and the Board of Fisheries consistently strive to utilize the most rigorous science available to manage sustainable fisheries in our state. Some of the components of harvest management are in-season management and applied science. In our management activities, the Division of Commercial Fisheries works very closely with the Division of Sport Fish in the conduct of both management and research activities. In-season management really is the primary strength of our management system. It enables the ability by professional scientists to open and close fisheries based on their professional judgment, the most current biological information, fisheries with performance, and subject to regulations and allocations by the Board of Fisheries. Under our applied science component, research biologists and other specialists conduct applied research in close cooperation with our fisheries managers. The purpose of the division's research sections is to ensure that the management of our fisheries are conducted consistent with sustained yield and that managers have the technical support that they need to ensure that. The commercial fisheries managed by the division are extremely diverse and range from small boat nearshore fisheries like the one pictured here showing Kuskokwim Bay salmon fishing delivering to their processor in Quinnahawk, all the way to large offshore fisheries like the one pictured here, one of the Bering Sea crab fisheries. Another core service is stock assessment and applied research. You'll see on this slide that we utilize a number of tools to accomplish that. For salmon escapement enumeration, we utilize weirs, towers, sonar, foot and aerial surveys. We estimate juvenile salmon. We conduct shellfish and groundfish surveys, herring spawn deposition and hydroacoustic surveys, aerial herring surveys, dive surveys, and we collect biological, genetic, and coated wire tag samples to assist us in this. This slide highlights just a few examples of the ongoing salmon enumeration and assessment and sampling projects in the state. The top left will probably be familiar to Representative Osterman. Those are the Iacuruc and the Karlik weirs on Kodiak Island. And on the bottom left and right are pictures of the Fraser Fish Pass on Kodiak Island. This is home to a very successful introduced sockeye salmon run in a previously barren lake back in the 50s. And since the mid-80s, this self-sustaining population has now enabled about a million sockeye salmon to be harvested from this run annually. Some other salmon enumeration projects are the Bear River Weir in the upper left-hand side of the slide on the north side of the Alaska Peninsula. Across from that is the Port Muller cannery owned by Peter Pan, and they support our Port Muller test fishing operations that provide information on sockeye salmon entering Bristol Bay. The lower left shows a technician pulling a scale from a salmon that we use for aging salmon, and then on the right is a salmon fingerling that's about to be tagged. This picture reflects test fishing in the Yukon River, and on the top picture and the lower picture is what looks to be a difficult deployment of a sonar on the Yukon River. Some non-salmon examples of our stock assessment. The upper left picture is a department diver conducting a sea cucumber transect to estimate abundance. The lower left picture is tanner crab survey information being conducted on the research vessel Medea, gathering information to establish guideline harvest levels for the commercial tanner crab fishery. And obviously the one on the right is the conduct of little neck clam survey in Prince William Sound. Move into some other species. The upper left picture here is Cassiana near Sitka. The milky color in that slide is herring spawn. We fly aerial surveys and estimate the mileage of spawn deposited on the shoreline as an assessment tool. On the right, you'll see a successful prawn pot pull. And the little guy in the lower center picture is an octopus, which we don't assess, but was seen during another one of our dive surveys. Another core service is aquaculture permitting. We permit and provide technical assistance and oversight to 34 private nonprofit hatcheries in Alaska. We have one aquatic shellfish hatchery in Seward and numerous shellfish farms throughout the state. Our information services and public information section is a way that we communicate with the public and make information available to other scientists as well as our staff. You can see from the list that it's a fairly diverse suite of activities that we undertake. These data systems provide salmon forecasts, harvest summaries, fish prices, ex vessel values, and wholesale values for the staff, the public, and for policymakers like yourselves.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Miller.
Thank you, sir. Could you define ex vessel value for me?
Ex vessel value is the price that the boats on the Quinnahock, for example, get when they first deliver their catch to a processor. So it's the first price initially paid for the value of a product.
Thank you.
Thanks.
For the record, Vice Chair Representative Johnson has joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologize for my tardiness.
Continue.
Sorry.
In addition to the four core services, we have two additional functions that support all of the core services. We provide laboratory services that provide information that are critical to assisting managers in season and out. Those are our pathology lab, our coded wire tag and otolith aging labs, and our genetic stock identification lab. Another very important element that supports all of our core services is data processing. And again, you'll see that there are a diverse set of databases, eight of them, that are used to manage fisheries and provide information about them. I'd like to call your attention especially to the eLanding Electronic Catch Reporting System. This comprises an important new and innovative element of our data processing system. The share matching component of the federally rationalized crab fishery, which we manage on their behalf, where individual fisheries quotas from crab deliveries need to be matched to available processor-held processor quotas for a large portion of the fisheries. This is the most complex data program that we manage, and precise real-time tracking of the accounts is required. It's pretty exciting because the eLanding program has now expanded into groundfish, and pilot programs for salmon were undertaken this last summer. The expansion of this program will result in real-time reporting of harvest data, reducing manual fish ticket data entry, and improving our efficiency. To accomplish these tasks, the division's organized into four regions and the divisional headquarters in Juneau. Our Southeast Fisheries Management Region is located in Douglas, Central Region, and AYK Fisheries Regions are located in our Anchorage office, and our Westward Fisheries Management Region is headquartered in Kodiak. You can see on this picture that the Southeast Region runs from Dixon Entrance on the border to Canada up to Yakutat. Central Region is comprised of Prince William Sound, Cook Inlet, and Bristol Bay. Westward contains the Aleutian Islands, Kodiak, Alaska Peninsula, and the Bering Sea fisheries. And the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim region consists of Kuskokwim and Yukon regions and Norton's and Kotzebue Sounds. To accomplish these tasks, in FY11, we had 314 permanent staff, 450 non-perm and seasonal staff, and we recently just added three interns to that list. That's not reflected on the slide. So in FY12, we'll have a total of 767 positions. And we maintain 20 permanent offices, 84 seasonal offices and field camps, and six large research vessels. Now I'd like to turn your attention to missions and measures and four of the targets that represent the division's current highest priorities. The first is ex vessel value of commercial harvests and mariculture production above $1 billion annually, and you will see that we have exceeded that since 2001, so that's pretty exciting. Second one we're a bit more challenged with. As you can see, while we're exceeding the measure for coho and pink salmon, in recent years we are not achieving the measure statewide for sockeye, chum, and chinook salmon. The department employs a robust interdivisional approach to developing scientifically defensible escapement goals for roughly 290 stocks statewide. It's well known that chinook have experienced declines throughout much of the state for any number of reasons. Bycatch in other fisheries can be one, changing ocean conditions another, potentially climate change. It's interesting, however, that the Chinook decline is not consistent statewide. For example, Chinook on the Alaska Peninsula has met its Chinook salmon escapement goals for 30 years running. However, the broad-scale declines point to issues that are not necessarily stock or river specific, but likely reflect some larger influences. For sockeye and chum salmon, runs for these species are naturally highly variable and trends are inconsistent across the state. To mitigate for poor runs, managers conduct fisheries to achieve escapement goals, making any surplus available for harvest. Where possible, these escapements are monitored while fisheries are being prosecuted, and based upon in-season run projections, fishing effort can be adjusted with openings and closures to ensure that adequate numbers of fish are reaching the spawning grounds. However, due to data gaps, many of the goals are simply post-season report cards, as it were, because escapement projects are quite distant from the fisheries or because the species goal in question is not a target for that specific fishery. These are called sometimes called mixed stock fisheries. That's a fishery comprised of a number of individual runs, and we would need additional assessment tools like abundance estimates and stock identification methods to actually measure some of those fishery impacts on those stocks in real time. We may not make all of the goals all of the time, and missing them occasionally is not a threat to sustainability. What would be a threat, though, is a chronic inability to achieve them. When that happens, in addition to taking restrictive management measures in season when runs appear to be weaker than anticipated, per the policy for management of sustainable salmon fisheries, when there is a chronic inability, which is defined as not meeting an escapement goal for 4 out of 5 years, which is the life cycle of most salmon, the department then recommends a stock of concern status to the Board of Fisheries, which in turn, if accepted by the board, sets in place more restrictive management measures, research plans, and habitat analysis in order to better protect such stocks and again achieve escapement goals.
So,
yeah.
While you're on this,
go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. So is there can you point to a region, that has the, were you not meeting the goals in 2008, 2009, because it reflects back to 2006 and 7, so.
AYK has had difficulty in Chinook salmon and all chum salmon, and then just Chinook generally statewide for the last couple of years, and probably what's responsible for those.
And the sockeye is our specific area, the sockeye.
I really can't answer that. I'll try to find that out. The major sockeye fisheries have been doing fairly well. Upper Cook Inlet did well, Les Amour Bristol Bay did well. The Carlet, obviously, is real up and down for sockeye. But I can get specifics for you if you'd like.
Thank you.
Moving on to better news, the third mission and measure is develop genetic baselines for Alaskan Chinook, chum, and sockeye stocks that will include 100 stocks in each baseline. And since 2008, we've been above that goal for the three species under discussion.
Representative Austin.
The stock assessments in place, how much of this is reflected in currency versus
you're probably familiar with WASAP, the Western Alaska Salmon Stock Identification Program, which is taking place in the Western Gulf along the north side of Alaska Peninsula, Crystal Bay, Kuskokwim, and Yukon. So to the extent that we're taking samples in the South Peninsula for that,
I know that that's getting strong emphasis right now, but I really can't speak to the rest of the Gulf. The Council, the North Pacific Council, because of the high Gulf Chinook bycatch, is fast-tracking an analysis and regulation package to try to reduce that, and along with that, there are genetic studies that are going to be conducted specific to state waters beyond what I just wanted.
Follow up, Representative Osterman.
Since developing genetic baselines, for a long time, and I assume I missed out into the lower 2003, there was a lot of sample being collected, but to work on the samples and set up the baseline from that money. So does this reflect that you now accomplished that baseline?
We're accomplishing the baseline. We've made a lot of really good progress on that. And I'd be happy to have Eric Volk, who is our chief fisheries scientist, come out and just follow up and provide you with a report on the progress. But that, you're right that that does reflect additional funding and additional analysis. Our final mission of measures is that all aquatic farms operating will have current permits, and we are meeting that target. For FY12, our total budget request is $66,159,700. You'll see that that breaks down into 65.4% unrestricted general fund, 5% designated general fund, 16.3% in federal funds, and 13% in other funding sources. Finally, I'd like to call your attention to the economic impact of the seafood industry on Alaska's economy. This is a 2009 report by Northern Economics Board, values in 2007. You can see that significant employment was generated in seafood harvesting, processing, and support industries. Approximately a little over half of those jobs were held by Alaskans. We generated significant revenue and direct payments to Alaskans, total sales of $3.6 billion within Alaska. And this is an interesting fact that the industry paid more in taxes to the state general fund than any other industry except oil and gas. And I'm in the process of trying to get exact numbers and the breakdown by fund source for Representative Thompson in response to a request. In 2008, according to a National Marine Fisheries Service commercial landing report, Alaska upheld its position as the number one fishing state in the country, harvesting more than 54% of the fish harvested in the U.S., which was up 32% from 2007, and accounted for 39% of the total U.S. ex-vessel value. This graph shows you the ex-vessel value of various Alaska commercial fisheries from 1997 to 2010. And this is based on, as we discussed earlier, the ex-vessel value. The aqua bar at the bottom represents the contribution of salmon, and the other species are denoted there by color. You can see that after some pretty serious declines in salmon ex-vessel values back in the late 90s, those ex-vessel values are again starting to decrease in recent years, while the value of groundfish is decreasing. Salmon are the most valuable commercial fishery managed by the state in state waters, and the preliminary ex-vessel value of that fishery in 2010 was over $533 million. In addition to the economic value of Alaska's fisheries, the value to subsistence and personal use harvesters is incalculable in both cultural terms and in food replacement costs. And finally, I'd like to call your attention to this neat little yellow eye rockfish as seen from a survey sub that we lease that's used for estimating rockfish abundance for demersal shelf rockfish, and I said that especially for Representative Miller because he told me he knows what it means. I'd like to thank you for your time and attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you've got.
Questions? Representative Pruitt.
Just clarification, it's two slides back. It's on the economic impact slide. I see that there's around 30,000 jobs that are not held by Alaskans in that fishery. But, and that, here's where I think I just need the clarification. If we've got almost $800 million in direct payments for labor, but only $237 million are going to Alaska residents, that's a large chunk that's going to those 30,000 people. Am I reading that right?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Is there any explanation on why that large amount is going to people that aren't residents of Alaska?
Well, for the non-resident fishermen, they're taking that revenue home with them when they go and not spending it in Alaska. In addition, the processing sector and Department of Labor can probably inform you better than I, but there's not a real high resident participation in the processing sector. In fact, in recent years, it's evolved to the fact that a lot of processing workers even are coming in from out of country because it's been difficult to get domestic workers. So I think that those are two of the big factors in terms of why we're not seeing more return to Alaskans.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Miller.
Thank you, sir. I'd pretty much like to follow that up. Well, actually, I have two questions. Let me start with the first one. Right on the first page, your title indicates that this is an overview of commercial fisheries.
Yes.
So we're discussing commercial. Am I to understand that when you're making your counts, your scientists are assessing escapements and so forth, is this the one division, excuse me, that's going to govern how many fish are going to be allocated or what sort of fisheries are going to be open for all of the other users, the subsistence, the sports fisher, the personal fishing, etc.?
No. We also have a division of sport fisheries who I'm sure will be presenting as well.
Yes, they will.
And they're solely responsible for management of sport and recreational fisheries. We share responsibility for some of the personal use fisheries, depending on whether or not they're in freshwater or saltwater. And there are a couple that are just sort of opportunistically located where sport fish has staff in the area and commercial fisheries doesn't. I'd like to make it very clear that the department does not allocate the resource. That's a responsibility of the Board of Fish. The department implements management plans and allocations as told to us by the Board of Fish. Both divisions have research and assessment programs, and we do try to work closely together to make the information flow as seamless as possible so that users receive the maximum benefit of the knowledge of both divisions.
Follow-up question, Representative Miller.
And I have to admit that on first hearing this, my first reaction is it sounds like it's redundant. Not that redundant when it comes to, you know, counting fish that you can't see really very easily is a bad thing. But do you ever come up to a situation where one division gets one kind of account that says, okay, open the fishery, it looks good. The other division saying, wait a minute, you're counting them in the wrong place or something to that effect?
We try not to have that happen. It's some of the way or the reason for the allocations between who does what between the divisions is species specific. Chinook and coho salmon, for example, are highly sought sport fish species, and so in many circumstances, sport fish division will be responsible for the information relative to those two fisheries, whereas in other cases, commercial fisheries on the Yukon, for example, we do manage commercial fisheries division manages Chinook on the Yukon because we manage most of the fisheries along that river. So it's not neat and clean and orderly, but certainly we do work closely together when there are differing interpretations of information and data and try to always come to some consensus and agreement on what that means and how action should be tailored based on the information.
So you get your information, pretty much raw data that's then summarized by your scientific groups. They submit it to you. You make then that information available to the fisheries board to decide what action they want to take on actually opening or closing a particular fishery.
In-season management, a
according to managements that are set up by the board convenes in three-year cycles for all of the different regions around the state. So we'll have a map, as it were, in terms of instruction from the board, usually in regulation, about how to manage a fishery and to whom the fish should be allocated. And once we have those marching orders, then based on the process that you've described, our in-season managers utilize that information to implement what the board has told us that we should do. Does that make that clear?
Not yet, but I'm getting pieces of it. Last question. I'd like to follow up from Representative Pruitt's question, and perhaps you can just like point us toward a place. Maybe you don't know the answer right this minute. It seems that that's an awful lot of money for jobs going to non-Alaskans, and obviously I think everyone up here would share this same sentiment. We'd sure like to see more Alaskans getting those dollars. Any thoughts, any folks, references you might, you know, point us toward that might be able to give us some input on that?
Yeah. Department of Labor actually provides it in its Economic Trends series, which I think come out once a month. Pardon me?
Just came out.
In November every year, preparatory to the big seafood expo down in Seattle, they publish one that always contains information. It's the seafood industry economic trends, and that's the best source of information that I'm aware of. They definitely are the folks that track who's making what and who's taking it where. So I recommend talking to them or getting your hands on that publication. Last I knew, it was available on their website. Labor.gov, I would assume.
I will. Thank you.
Representative Osterman.
I'm going to answer a couple questions. I have it.
Go right ahead.
The just last week, the Department of Labor did publish the non-resident statistics, and it's all in one book of every piece of the industry in the state of Alaska. It actually should be on your desk or in your inbox somewhere. You might check with your staff before you go looking for having to look it up on an email. The nature of the commercial fisheries in the state of Alaska goes back hundreds of years, and there is, from the time they started building seafood processing plants in Alaska, they brought labor in with them to do it, whether it was the Chinese or the Filipinos or who, but that has been a system that's been set up and running. Whether it's right or whether it's wrong, obviously, is a question. But the problem that you face is when you're talking 30-some thousand people difference of non-residents coming to the state, imagine the salmon industry starts up and it runs for 60 days. Where are you going to find 30,000 people to come in and take care of the processing industry in the state of Alaska? So they get imported, and that's the problem that you have. And then you have craft fishery comes along, and it runs for 6 weeks. Got to bring all these processing people in to actually do the processing work. And it's almost impossible, given the nature of the business, to say you're going to get, you know, we'd love to get 100%, obviously, resident hires, but it's just the nature of the business. Fishing industry and the tourist industry operate fairly basically the same. You got 120 days of tourist industry. Where are you going to find all those? And then they're pushing the exact same numbers that the fisheries is pushing on non-resident hire when you look at the statistics. Now, like I said, I just went through that book late last week, so I know it's out there for you to
look through.
Question.
I had one question, and now I got talking about everything else and forgot it.
You'll think of it.
I'll come back.
Other questions from the committee? Think hard.
Oh, I know.
Go right ahead, Representative Osterman.
One of the problems that we faced in when we look at meeting the escapement goals for the state of Alaska is on the salmon industry is the modeling that you have to do. The modeling makes a determined, you know, you use most of the streams and stuff you do, you use a guess on what the smolt out migration count is because you don't have, you know, not every stream and every major issue area is covered, so you don't know how many fish are coming out. You don't know what survived in the wintertime. Then they go out in the ocean and travel all the way to Russia and China and back to here. So you have to use a model to do that. I have pushed for a number of years trying to get the department to bring forward a request within their budget to go back to counting most every major stream and so we know how many fish come out, so that we actually know what the escapement's been, so we have an idea. Then you can run your model on what goes off, what's happening out in the oceans and the warming trends and everything else. I don't see that in looking through the short form. I don't see any increase in Comfish's budget to start doing that again. We used to do it prior to having oil. People went out and counted smolt, but we've got all this oil money now. We don't do that. And so my question, obviously, is as acting director, do you have an answer of why it's not in the budget this year, request?
Actually, I think I would like to kick that one over to Matt Namath, who is our salmon research fellow in Kodiak, and see if Matt might have some impressions about the usefulness of that information, first of all. Matt, are you online and able to take that one?
No. Mr. Namath, are you online?
You can come back with
apparently not.
Let the department come back with a response. I prefer that it
goes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the request had been made by the committee. If you could please forward them to the committee staff so we can do the distribution to all the committee members. Sure. I'd appreciate it. Further questions from members? Ms. Asplund, you have a script that you were reading from that was pretty informative. It might help the committee if they had that. Can you provide us with we have the slide presentation, but if we could get that, we can distribute that. That would be a help also. I'd appreciate it.
Number.
And if there's no further questions, Ms. Asplund, thank you for your informative presentation. The committee looks forward to working with you in the division. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Okay, our next Fisheries Committee meeting will be at 5 p.m. on Thursday, February 3rd, 2011. And at that meeting, we'll be continuing our department's overview with a presentation from the Division of Sport Fish. And at 5:38 p.m., I adjourn this meeting.